I'm just going to stop talking. It's a wonderful book.
This is Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Adam Camilleri.
Oh, hey, guys.
And Red Powell.
Hello.
We are the Bell Lost Halls podcast. Thank you for joining us. Please like, share, subscribe, click. I really like the comments. Like we got a few comments like, yo, just boosting those algos. And I really appreciate that because it helps other people find us. And thanks for continuing to support our content and listen every week. We are a weekly show. So if you're just tuning in for the first time, you can come back next week and we'll have another episode. Pretty cool.
Oh, right? Really?
Yeah.
Calling your shots early, mate. So, you know. So it's not like we haven't been doing this weekly for, you know, time immemorial.
It does feel like, yeah. So our episode, by the time next week, will be like 383 or something like that.
I was going to say, I feel like we're closing in on 400.
On a milestone, yeah.
It's still a fair amount away with only one a week. But yeah, we're going to get there. I want to try to do something pretty cool for 400. I've got some ideas. We'll see what comes out. It might just be another episode, but hey, we'll see.
Fair.
Yeah, we were graced with Pete Foley from Games Workshop for episode 300.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oof, that was nice. a long time ago, but it was still cool.
We'll finally crack that ADB nugget.
Oh, that'd be so good.
He's been holding out for years, man.
Holding out would imply that he's considering it. Or
that it's a possibility. Yeah,
I don't think that's the case, but hopefully, yeah, we'll see. Maybe I'll try to know somebody that knows him or something. If anybody happens to maybe put in a good word for us. But I've been painting like the wind recently.
You know, what have you been painting?
Well, I was kind of up against that wall with those Assault Intercessors, but I've gotten fairly past them. And this weekend, I'm going to be playing in a 500-point combat patrol event. So just a few people, you know, playing a small game. I'm not trying to endorse getting out there to tournaments if it's not responsible, safe in your area. Everybody use your best judgments, follow guidelines, and, you know, do everything responsible and right for you. But it's happened to work out for me where I think it's a cool idea to play in this little 500-point tournament.
That's great.
And so, of course, one of my good buddies shows up and he's like, yo, I want to take this list. I'm like, that sounds like a cool list. Guess how many figures from that list he had built and painted.
Oh. Oh.
Anybody want to take a guess?
One.
No.
Zero.
Zero is closer.
Then don't take the list.
Okay. So he was like, I was helping him build his list. And so he had some, what are the Inceptors that we had painted for him. I had painted for him before. And he had some scouts. But he wants to take some heavy intercessors and Uriel Ventress.
Oh.
Okay.
They were on sprue 2 days ago, and today they are battle ready.
You are so good to your friends. Holy crap. I would never in a million years ask anybody to paint, unless I was commission paid, like paying them commission pricing to paint me anything. Wow. It's like, you know, cash in. If you are a friend of Paul Murphy, that guy is paying out.
And so during the course that I was making my list, I had the best list worked out. I'm talking about, I was so proud of this list. I'm like, oh, I'm going to wreck so many faces. So many faces. Just, only eight
so
of us.
So what? You managed to get 24 Sanguard into 500 points.
No, I had 60 Poxwalkers.
Yuck. Okay, oh, wow. Fair.
Well, turns out you can't do that.
Because you have to have equivalent numbers of Heretic Astartes, Bubunok Astartes units.
That's exactly right. So I had this amazing list worked out. Thankfully, I didn't have to add all the figures already, so I didn't have to pay anything. And then I'm like, oh man, I really want to do the Terminus Est, and I'll throw these 60 Poxwalkers down, and I'm pretty much just going to win every single game.
Correct.
Sure.
And then I'm like, oh crap. Well, now I have to have a Bubonic Astartes. Well, I can't. This is now. It was 60 Poxwalkers and 5 Chaos Spawn.
Oof. And everybody would have been like shaking their fist at the Sky Gods, being like, why, GW, did you let this happen? And then, oh wait, they didn't.
They actually didn't. Yeah.
They actually didn't.
So this is actually a good tip. So whenever I prepare for a tournament and I build my list in any app, no matter what, electronically or whatever, I always, always, always go back and review the codex just to make sure I've got the right points for all the weapon upgrades, you know, the codex and of course the compendiums and all this other kind of stuff, like whatever the resources are, make sure I've got the accurate points, make sure I've followed all the restrictions, make sure I'm not violating anything. And of course you forget these things when you're building your dream list in your head that you can't take all these Poxwalkers without offsetting them with bubonic Astartes. Now, in a 2,000-point game, it's not a big deal because, you know, you can offset them with Death Shroud, Bodyguard, Blight Lords, Plague Marines, you know, or whatever. But it's a big deal at 500 points.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. Well, because, you know, well, just one unit of Plague Marines is, you know, a fifth of your army at 500 points.
Yeah, and so then I'm like, okay, well, great. I'm going to have a Plague Caster, one unit of Poxwalkers, one unit of Plague Marines, a Rhino, and Chaos Spawn, and Terminus Est.
See, that's just, you can't have the Rhino.
That's right.
The plot thickens.
Just one after the other.
So giving the take is giving and taking.
This is harder to be a cheese monster. But I think that's good.
I think it's good too. I actually, so this may be a lead to many gasps from you American guys, but I actually quite enjoyed comp tournaments. I don't enjoy every tournament being comp tournaments, as in every tournament having additional restrictions on the way you build your army. And for some of that, those happened were prolific in 7th edition and 6th edition in Australia, and less so in the States, but there still was quite a few. I actually used to like them just because of the
like
extra
Highlanders,
thinking.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Just because of the extra thinking I'd have to do with my army. And I found it would, you know, made me find different combinations and less powerful ways to get the same job done, et cetera, et cetera. So I actually quite like this stuff, because essentially that's what this is. Like, the Terminus Est Strike Force is a comp way of playing Death Guard.
Yeah. So what I ended on before we jumped too far into, which I want to explore this topic, but I ended on now Typhus, a unit of Plague Marines, Poxwalkers, and Chaos Spawn.
That still sounds awesome.
And so I had an old Typhus, but I didn't have the new Typhus done. So guess what I did? I painted the new Typhus. So in the last 2 days, I've painted Uriel of Interest, 5 Assault Intercessors, and I'm sorry, Heavy Intercessors, and Typhus. And a Sea Monster for some rando miniature of another buddy left over here.
That's prolific.
I cannot be stopped. I say that. Now, no, I'm probably not going to touch a brush for a month or so.
Like, you know, hungover on vodka and someone offers you a shot and you're like, no, bring pain. No,
but I'm event driven. I'm motivated by events. And so I think that I'm so thirsty for anything that I just went on berserk mode for this combat patrol thing.
Oh, it's good. I mean, you know, it's obviously reaped some rewards. Mind you, the fact that your friends have also reaped the rewards of your ferocity is pretty astounding.
These are good friends, you know, so it's, yeah. They've earned it over the years, I'll say that. And one of them will probably get the drinks this weekend. We'll see. But,
there you go.
Well, that's fair. I was about to say, you know, hopefully there's some reciprocation in some manner.
Yeah, and I'll say these are not like museum quality miniatures. These are what I would consider battle ready. Above, probably realistically a little bit above battle ready, but conservative, they are certainly battle ready to get the points. Mm-hmm. And I'm posting, of course, up on Twitter, Warmaster_TPM, and Instagram, Fights with Dice. And yeah, but so I think they look good, and it's been an interesting challenge.
Nice.
There are some things that I can fix, you know, but or do differently when I have spent more time. But whatever, tournament's tomorrow.
You working on anything red?
Moving.
Ah, fair.
So we're talking about comp tournaments. Sorry, I don't want to like go too far off that.
Yeah,
if we got hobby projects, we can jam on that. But you did bring up a cool thing about comp, and comp is not, it's not a four-letter word.
No, it's not. And it's a weird thing that people have been trying to get their head around for years. I used to, on another show I was on, and this was during 7th edition, used to get asked, you know, what are my thoughts on comp? What do I feel about comp? Because it was very Aussie-focused, and there was a lot of comp at the time. I used to explain it to people that think about how there's games like, if people have played video games, there's games like Half-Life, there's games like Warcraft 3 that have been modded into another game, as in like you had Half-Life and then they added mods to that and it became Counter-Strike. I don't know if you guys are of the same era as I grew up playing Counter-Strike and stuff like, you know, original Dota, Defense of the Ancients, that were mods for other games. That's kind of what I describe comp as. Comp is somebody has patched the game of 40K or Fantasy or Age of Sigmar in order to make it reflect what they think is their most preferred way of playing the game. And so one of the ones that Red said was Highlander. I wonder if you're willing to explain that for us, Red.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, like, you know, it's a format, right? And so Highlander being that you can only have one of each unit, which I think in certain extents, you know, it used to be, I think it was a little more interesting when point values were somewhat lower, and so that there was more variety across the board. Now I think that you actually find more lists that have just one of each kind of deal in certain regards. Mm-hmm. But the fact of only having one, you know, we've talked about having like built-in list redundancies and things like that, and only having one of something doesn't allow you to just spam something by any means.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to explore that and find units that do actually achieve the effects that you're trying to build redundancies into. I think it's very cool. I think it's a cool little way to approach it. I will admit it's maybe not something that I'd sign up for, over and over and over again, but I do like the variations.
Yeah, me too. What's your experience with comp in, Paul?
With comp, I mean, legitimately, like, I feel that most comp systems are inherently flawed because what they're basing the comp on is not equal across all armies. And I don't want to go too far on that. So let me take it to something that might be a productive point, is that what comp ultimately does is just changes what the cheese is.
It moves the goalposts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, yeah, that's been my experience as well. I mean, the fact that people think, the reason why they think comp should be a thing is because they think 40K is inherently flawed in and of itself. But trying to make a perfect patch fix for something that's already flawed usually results in something that's still quite flawed. I suppose that's been the argument for and against comp for a very long time. I just like playing the game. I think I've just like playing 40K so much that I don't really care what the parameters are.
Yeah.
I'm just somebody who just, I love variety as well, which I think is something that I am fearful a couple of years from now, you know, if we've had one rule set, one mission set that's been adopted almost globally, I think is only good for, you know, making the game homogenous across different states, across different locations in the world, different nations. And I think that's only a good thing for the game. I do wonder about how I'm going to sit with the variety inside the metagame in a couple of years from now. But I suppose that is that's a thing to start, something to review a couple of years from now, not to worry about it too much.
With this kind of stuff, I enjoy solving for whatever the problem is. And the problem in that case is the comp system. You know, it's, and I don't mean problem in like a bad sense. I mean, you're solving the equation of what is good, what is competitive. Mm. And so you're changing the parameters of what that equation has to look like.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and that's for all these things, right? I mean, all games, to a certain extent, we're presenting ourselves with different problems, right? And then in our, like you said, Adam, you know, in a lot of the competitive sense, we're facing off against standardized problem sets to a certain extent. But then you start adding in these comps, you start changing it up, and it's, you know, it does have its own factors and adjustments. It's like, you know, there are some puzzles that are similar to one another, maybe not the same, but you just have to approach it, and it kind of engages your mind in a different way. I think that there's a lot of advantage to that.
I remember a fun little tidbit someone brought it to me ages ago, and Red, you probably know better than I will with your history of warfare and stuff, but there was a couple of treaties signed in, you know, a bygone era banning the use of crossbows in warfare because they were deemed to be too potent, as in like you could, they required no training, they required very little. All I did was like an arm strong enough to, yeah, exactly. And peasants could kill like fully armored mounted knights with crossbows, and all the knights got together and banned the use of crossbows because they're like, crossbows OP, no more. I'm not getting shot down by Billy the potato farmer, you know, this time. And so like comp is, you know, you could see that as a form of comp, which I think is hilarious. I'm not even sure if that story is true, but it is funny.
Well, I mean, look at the rule of three and where that came from, right? Before that became built into the rule set. I mean, that's you do see where some people think that you should implement things. And even now in the competitive build, the secondaries, right? There are people that don't think that it's fair that certain codexes have secondaries and others don't because they haven't gotten their codex yet.
Yeah.
And so that mindset kind of carries itself forward. I mean, you're absolutely right there. The people, especially, you look back at some cases of warfare with limited warfare, and that's absolutely a heuristic. You know, you go into something with your own intentions. I think something that's important, history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. And so you do see a lot of trends and things like that. And even in our own, how we approach things, you know, we want to make things quote unquote fair. And I think Thucydides in the Peloponnesian dialogue would probably tell you that the people who often get to make up those rules are typically the people that have more of an advantage. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, you take like the knights and everything they ruled and owned, like, of course they could make the rules that you don't, you know, we're not going to produce more crossbows and things like that because we don't like it, because there's a very interesting, you know, I'm sorry, Adam, I don't mean to do this to you, but Paul, you remember R.A. Salvatore's Dritz, right?
Oh, yeah.
Adam, have you read those books yet, or are we going to have another discussion about that?
Nah, discuss away. I haven't read them.
Oh, my gosh. We've got a lot. We have a lot of work for you to do. You understand?
I am currently working my way through the Expanse series, and okay, then after that, I've been given the Gormenghast trilogy, which was apparently a very highly touted fantasy novel that came out in lieu around the same time as Tolkien, and it's kind of spoken about as like the, not the precursor, but the natural evolution of where Tolkien was. This gentleman wrote this during, I think it was 1943, the first one came out. And it's a trilogy of books that, it's a pretty hard going reading at the moment. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, getting through it.
That's good. No, that's good. I mean, I'm glad you're going back that far. That one's, it's actually really good. That's fantastic. There's another one I'd throw at you is E.R. Edison's The Worm Ouroboros, which was written probably about 20, 30 years before Tolkien. But fantastic stuff. Anyways. So Dritz goes on to say, you know, it's funny with the crossbow discussion, R.A. Salvatore has him say something to the effect of, you know, the problem with things like crossbows, and he actually is talking kind of like about like the concept of guns to that extent that, you know, they don't require skill to necessarily use. In fact, it almost provides an not necessarily even unfair, but it gives them too much of an advantage. You know, you don't have to practice, whereas certain things like swords or arrows, bows and arrows, you know, you do have to practice. You do have to develop skill. You can't just step into something like a fight and suddenly have this unearned advantage. It's very interesting. And so that's really interesting to see that play out. But when it comes to it, you know, you think about it, some armies take, like, I would argue Necrons, for example, are meant to spam to a certain extent, right?
True.
And so it's very interesting. You add these format rules on top and this composition type rules and what that does to certain armies versus others. Because I think Space Marines could get away with having one of anything versus, I would argue, it definitely is not to the advantage of, take like, you know, Necrons with only five core units and so much of their benefits being played out. So it does add some interesting skewed perspectives to some of the armies, for sure.
Well, exactly right, because not all armies are, you know, you'd inherently think that, say, in Napoleonic era battlefields, you know, everybody had, you know, some form of dragoon on the flanks or whatnot. Everyone has some form of militia, some form of regimented infantry, et cetera, et cetera. But you think you can apply that to Harlequins. Harlequins don't actually have enough. Harlequins could never, you know, traditionally play Highlander because they don't actually have enough slots. They don't have enough units in their force to take, you know, to fill out a 2,000-point army.
You could probably do 2,000 points of Necron characters, though.
That's true. Mm. Or Space Wolf characters.
Yeah, Space Wolves are...
that's a two-month callback right there.
Death Guard Elites.
Yeah, Death Guard as well.
This is also not the first time we tried to convince you to read Dritz novels, either.
I
just get lost. There's just so many... There's so much to read. There's so little time. I
finished Saturnine. I'm not going to derail, but I finished Saturnine. No spoilers, but my goodness. Later on, we'll talk reaction. No spoilers, but later on the show, reaction to that novel.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but you know, when I was younger, I'd jump into bed, get my novel, whatever I was reading, I'd read for, you know, an hour before bed. And now I get three pages in and my eyes start drooping and I'm gone.
That's what work does for you.
Yeah, my rate of reading has dropped like phenomenally. Well, in my old age.
To keep us slightly on topic, although we meandered into this topic, but hey, here we are, a comp system, is it a tool for culture crafting? And I know we've talked, you know, we need to have a whole episode on culture crafting.
Absolutely.
But I think comp is one of those slippery slopes for everything that we're talking about. But again, it's not bad. It's not a bad thing because, like we were just talking about, these armies of renown are essentially like some enforced comp if you want the benefits. Is that okay absolutely. To do? A benefit exchange type situation.
Yeah, I think the carrot and the stick conversation has always been one that's just been associated with comp and comp systems. Who benefits from comping? Do people benefit equally? Is there a give and a take within this essentially building of our own metagame? And yeah, I think the I like the carrot more than the stick. I like to see people given incentives to build certain ways rather than punished if they go outside the borders of XYZ.
Well, like you're talking about, if your comp system is you have to be 40%, 50% troops, and that was a legit thing back in the day, you know, not all armies could really effectively do that.
So, I mean, Warhammer Fantasy essentially came with its own comp system, which is pretty much what you're referring to, where in that had to have 25% to 25% troops or more.
Or
minimum.
Core, right? You know, I think it's not necessarily. Yeah, but it's same thing.
Yeah, and then you have up to 25% of essentially, to put it in 40k terms, at least fast attack and heavy.
Mm-hmm.
That was really cool. That always made for a good looking armies. Armies always looked like armies. And it was up until its death, I still think it was my favorite tabletop game I've ever played.
No, oh, nice. Yeah, again, I don't want to make it sound like I'm harsh on comp. I just think that it's in a lot of people's minds that the comp that what they're trying to address is very difficult to do when there are this many variables and moving parts and matchups and codex designs and that kind of stuff.
There's literally, I mean, I think I've said it on the show numerous times. I don't think there's any other game that exists that has so many unit choices, so many factions, so many different mechanics, all trying to be balanced at the same time, which is why I think true balance in 40K is a pipe dream. And as soon as you kind of let go of that, all of a sudden you become a lot more freer in what you're happy to play and play against. But in saying that, I think it should be something we strive for at all opportunities. But yeah, it's...
Well, let me flip it again.
It's just so hard to get to a level of absolute parity with all these moving parts, like you said.
Let me flip it one more time, though, is that have we grown past the need for an organized or top-down comp system with the way that missions are designed now? Missions even in the core book are designed.
I don't know. I really liked the old battalion requirement. The you know, three troops, for example, and one headquarters deal. I understand where Fantasy's position is, or where it was, sorry. But I do think that I know that not all armies being created the same. I do think that it makes sense for armies to have, and they won't do it right now because it's too similar, but kind of like the Armies of Renown kind of deal. I do think that there's something to like these requirements that in order to do this, you have to have this. I kind of makes sense for a lot of these armies to, why wouldn't Necrons require more of this? And they've kind of built that in with core concepts. Take the Drukhari, for example. If Drukhari didn't have the access to, I don't know, the spearhead formation or something like that, like how many heavy options do they really have? And I know that we kind of saw that to a drastic degree in 7th edition. And so I get it. It's not the best or the most ideal. And it does add a whole other level. I'd argue that we've kind of already gone past the point of complexity with 40K to, you know, given the fact of how many books we do have. The app is, I think, a great way to kind of level that complexity field. But at the same time, like, why can't we have all this extra stuff? Is there really a problem? Do you guys think that that's too much? Am I asking for too much? Am I thinking, you know, adding too much into it?
I'm just trying to talk ourselves into letting me take 60 Poxwalkers.
I mean, sure. I mean, again,
you're trying to alleviate the own you. From if you took 60 Poxwalkers to a 500 point game, you know that's 80 Poxwalkers, yeah. Everyone who plays you is going to be like, I'm not playing against 60. This is 80.
I didn't come on this list by accident.
Obvious.
I did almost play it by accident, though.
Fair.
Oh, man, no, thankfully.
It's cool.
Cool. Yeah, there's a reason.
And I want to be able to, I want people to be able to play the armies that they want, but I am happy. See, I'm not sure what G-Dub's, you know, modus operandi was when they did stuff like, you know, the Bubonic Astartes stuff has to be outnumber and have to have your highest ranking noble in your Necron army has to be your warlord, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not quite sure what their motivations were, but I can see what it's doing to the game. And I like what it's doing to the game.
It's to make, I mean, I think that there's some intelligent design in here in the fact that it's helping armies appear as if, you know, the theme wants them to on the table, which I don't mind. As long as it's like fun, as long as it continues to be fun and is themey, like I'm really cool with that. But even the cultist, in a Death Guard army, you can't take a crap ton of cultists either without taking Pomonic Astartes. And we're probably going to see that propagate out through other dexes, maybe.
Every dex from now on should have come with some form of restriction like that, just to inject some thematic elements into your build.
Scouts got moved to elite, that kind of thing.
Yeah. That one, I mean, they're paying for their sins, I believe.
That's the one that Adam wants to hold on to. He didn't want it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, I don't mind that. That's fine. I actually wish they did that earlier. So we actually saw TAC Marines before Primaris took over everything.
Well, I'm just saying that there's little changes like this that are creeping their way into, you know, the normal game to force either the choices. It's not comp, it's different design.
Yeah, exactly. It's not so much that it's comp. It's just, I don't know, I think every army should come with something like this. I think they're awesome, to be honest. The Death Guard one does seem to be the most painful to work with. Do you feel like that's true?
I do, but largely it's because I just want it to be slightly different.
Well, I believe it's because they've got the obvious what you want to do with this army is hoard it out, you know, pack in the models and get the efficiency from, you know, the points per wound and the extra toughness
even
and stuff.
Typhus,
but then you're like, nah.
He's the zombie master or whatever, you know? So you want to have 100 of them around him.
It's true.
Although, I mean, look, I'm not saying everyone does. I want 100 of them around him because I'm trying to bring out every bit of efficiency.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just going to game, man.
Yeah. But
you
at the same
still
time,
do,
yeah,
I've still seen lists that have 120 in it.
Oh, yeah. You can't. No, in a 2,000 point game, this is no issue.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. This is only a 500 point game problem. Which
is
the
it,
problem.
Though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be all my opponent's problem.
Yes.
If it were not that way. So really, I'm kind of like tongue in cheek. Like it, you look at it this way, it plays out and makes sense. Like the game is, am I making an argument for the game being balanced at different points levels? I don't know.
I think you might be.
Well, I don't want it. I want more Poxwalkers.
Well, there's a concept. I was just talking about variable points levels and things. And this is a concept that maybe might take us down another rabbit hole. Or there's been a bit of discussion about judging at the moment and how to judge events differently for different people. You guys are both, you know, tournament savvy veterans. People are starting to think that they're of the opinion that, you know, you're at a 100 player event, the guys at the top level playing for the win should be held to a different standard than the guys who, like, you are on the bottom table.
A little bit more active versus passive judging.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where do you guys stand on that front? Because I find that's a very,
take a
very
break?
Interesting conversation.
Let me take a break. Let's take a break.
Yeah. Right.
And no, this is, I mean, we're going to have this conversation, but let's take a break. A sponsor of this episode, in addition to our normal sponsor of Discount Games, is Rifle Ruler. And I'm going to insert a segment where I'm talking to, it's me and Val, Heffelfinger, talking about Rifle Ruler, the Kickstarter they have going on right now.
Fantastic.
So
please
hang on.
Look it up, guys.
Yeah. Hang on for that. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about active versus passive judge. It's a very controversial topic, and I'm not trying to oversell the controversy. Like, this is something that could set people off, kind of thing. So,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. See you in a minute.
Yep.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a very special kind of vendor spotlight segment on Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined this afternoon by Val Heffelfinger.
Paul Murphy!
What's up,
How
man?
Are you?
I'm long time.
Yeah,
it's been a while. I'm actually doing very well. So when I recorded the rest of the show that people are going to be hearing this before, is before I had played in this Combat Patrol event. And now this is after I've played in this, my first event post-COVID. It was very safe. I like how they did it all. Consideration had to be there, and it was a 500 point, very small event. But now I'm fresh off the heels of that. Can't wait to talk about it next week.
Well, you know, I think so, you know, some might be jealous, but I'm just happy for you, man. I can't wait to be able to do the same thing. And if we all just hang in there a bit longer, I'm from Canada. We just got to hang in there a little bit longer, and we'll be in your shoes soon too. And the same goes around the world.
Trust the science, everybody. Be safe. Make the right decision for them and stuff. But I was happy to get out with some very good friends and do this hobby that we love, extension. And that's kind of goes into this stuff, like an extension of the hobby that we love, like you and I, we do event casting. And that's kind of sideline or beside what I want to talk about with you today.
It is adjacent to it, if you will.
We're going to go with that. That word is way better than what I was saying. The Rifle Ruler app. They currently have a Kickstarter up right now on Kickstarter.com. We'll put the link in the show notes. But this is to expand the features currently offered by the Rightful Ruler app. And we messed around with this. We talked about it before, but it's augmented reality on your phone, specifically designed for like tabletop wargaming.
That's right. It's not just a 40K application. You can use the AR app on your phone to basically do measurements of whatever you like on a gaming table. But yeah, it was something that came out, I think, about a year and a half ago. They have the app is being distributed. It works. For me, I still prefer at this point a tape measure, but I think, the app with more development will be useful as an actual game aid for more people. However, I've always, the second I laid eyes on, a video of a game of 40K going on with, a line showing the measurement or a big circle around showing an aura, I thought to myself, like, this, we need this for broadcasting. We need this for streaming games of 40K.
What are some of the main goals of this Kickstarter? Right now it's up, and I think they're sitting at around, at around $3,300 USD with a, I guess this was done maybe in Canadian, but $8,337 USD goal.
Now, it's actually, so the guys who developed this actually, the lead developer is Swedish, living in Hong Kong. The actual Kickstarter is in, I'm blanking on the name of that currency.
It's Hong Kong dollars.
It's Hong Kong dollars. Yep. At any rate, getting close to halfway funded. So essentially the goal is to get to $8,000. The number is picked because in order to develop this into an app that could be used for broadcast, they need to build a desktop client. They essentially have to, just like in the old days, take the console game and port it over to PC. And to do that is comes with opportunity cost. And essentially what I've been working with them and we'll say since first laying eyes on it, trying to coax them into creating this desktop app. And ultimately it comes down to the fact that if they focus their time on developing features for a desktop app, they're not developing the app for, people who might be buying the app in the store or adding new features for people who are using it to actually play games with, which would be, a larger portion of their base. But I really believe that this is a super awesome opportunity both for Rightful Ruler to have their amazing technology shown to big audiences so that people can get an idea of what AR in tabletop gaming looks like and what it can do. But more importantly, I think it's a massive tool for creators, specifically for people like us who love to do live event tournament coverage, even folks like Tabletop Titans who do live streams of games or Art of War or any of those guys who are doing, full length games and coaching you through. It allows the creator to demonstrate on the table, on screen, what they see. Like if we're looking at a table, we know, roughly what a 3-inch aura looks like. We know how far each guy can shoot roughly. But if you're just someone who's scrolling by, or if you're a casual fan of playing Warhammer, these things aren't necessarily as intuitive. And so when you look at a game of Warhammer being streamed, a lot of the times, it doesn't really look like much.
The models are just standing there for long periods of time.
That's right.
Well, there's also some things, like there's some really nuanced play of where you're using the physical presence of your models to do things like block out sections of the table, auras,
yes,
or make it very difficult for people to come in from reserves in, yes, certain areas. And that's difficult to translate on, with a ruler at all times or on a television if you're watching this at home or something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's just, it's a way, like I would like to describe it. It allows, what the players imagine and see intuitively, who are at the table, allows what they see for the audience to see it. And, I think as far as 40K goes, there's a lot of people who believe that, it's not something that could ever be all that interesting to watch, even though there already is a growing, audience for live stream games of 40K at the tournament level or more casual level, doesn't really matter. That audience is growing with the way it's being presented now, which is often a top-down camera. Maybe if you're fancy, you got some handy cams or a side camera. So there is innovation already, but I feel like if we had more tools, like if you think of, anyone who might watch sports or, even in the last couple of years, just about every sport, if you watch the path of the ball in flight, whether it's baseball or golf or soccer, they use LiDAR technology. So, a way to track that ball in flight. So you can actually see the flight path and the speed and the velocity of the ball in all of these games. You'll see a lot of AR-like tech being used to For example, in racing, often you'll see the cars going around the track, and you'll see like almost like a cartoon thought bubble above the car, and it'll have the driver's name and maybe a vital statistic. Using Rightful Ruler, creators will be able to do exactly that. They'll be able to put a flag over top of, say, an Invictor tactical war suit. They can then add some information, like, for example, how many wounds it has. And, you know, just in a very clean, futuristic-looking overlay.
Can you name it, like, Brother Cassius?
Sure you could. Yeah, if you want it, right? Just in a very clean overlay, you can communicate very important information. You know, we're getting better at like having the score on the screen. But now, you know, we're getting to the point with something like this where we could have a really cool way to communicate other important information.
I'm totally digging it. And then, so this actually goes past just the application for broadcast that we're describing. It's very important to us because it's something we love doing. But when you're measuring distances and that kind of stuff from when in your opponent's turn, you need their cooperation. And maybe when you're trying to kind of stay away from them, it'd be kind of cool to pull up the altered reality and just zip it in there and get a rough idea for yourself while the other stuff is going on or while they're occupying that section of the table.
Sure. And I mean, that's something, if that interests you guys, you can do that right now. You can find Rightful Ruler on the iStore, on the App Store on Apple or Google Play. And you could do that right now. One thing that I think is with Rightful Ruler as a desktop app is, might seem crazy, but we're Warhammer people. We do crazy things. You could, for example, have an overhead camera over your own game table and use it for measurements, or even just setting up your deployment zone really easy.
Yes.
Putting your markers down super easy. You could use it as sort of a template that way. Something that I think is really, really exciting, especially in light of some of the criticism that's come towards the tournament community over the years and recently, is that I think we have this problem with judging at events, in the sense that, you know, our TOs are overworked and underappreciated, and there's usually very few of them at an event. And so it's hard to actually have people around to, well, sometimes enforce rules, but even to just ask questions or make sure everything is above board and fair. And if you had something like Rightful Ruler, you would be able to have, for example, a bunch of refs all over the world who'd be able to keep an eye on a game, measure things out, and make sure everything was going properly. They would have the tool that they would need to be as close as you can to actually being there.
Have a chat function,
like Rightful Ruler.
Direct connection to someone that's monitoring a collection of 5-6 tables.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you have someone, you know, the booth, basically, you know, radios down to the guy on the ground and say, hey, go check this out. Or, you know, maybe the chat, you know, notice something and there's someone in the chat who can verify, no, guys, don't worry about it. It's parallax, because it's hard to tell a lot of times how far things are in reality. You know, that was actually onside. So there's that application. Coaching, I think, is another thing. That's a big deal right now. We have a lot of, I think, some people like them, some people don't, but I appreciate entrepreneurs a lot, you know, people who take risks. And there are people out there who are really passionate about the game, and they're sharing their knowledge and their skills about how to learn this game and how to play it better.
Yeah.
Just like any serious game will have coaches and teachers. And I think this is an amazing teaching tool.
Oh, man. Movement is the most critical function of the game, in my opinion. I mean, there's so many times you can get yourself, oh, you're not wholly within this quarter, so you got no points. If you had just moved a quarter of an inch the other way, if you were less casual about it, then you're winning another game.
Yeah, absolutely. And the spatial relationships of models on the tabletop ultimately is what the game comes down to, right? It's. I mean, I don't like breaking down something as magical as a game of 40K into you know, zeros and ones, but it does really come
upon spatial relationships in 40K.
Spaceships, yeah, something like that. Geller Field. Regardless, you know, you don't want to take away all of the magic of 40K, but being able to understand, you know, what models are able to affect what models and intuitively be able to see that maybe just isn't easy to explain in the course of a call or a podcast or even a YouTube video with what the technology we have now. Doing something like this will let people, you know, teach the game better. And fundamentally, this is, speaking of science fiction, I think from a visual appeal perspective, this takes a science fiction game and makes it look like science fiction. So the presentation quality of, you know, going from an overhead cam to a handy cam, where all of these essentially holograms, you know, transition from one shot to the other, and you can see, you know, in three dimensions, you know, these tags floating over the models, or, you know, the ring around their area of influence, or the how close they have to be to objective markers, being able to turn all those elements on and off. It just makes for a much more visually engaging and fun looking game. And I think that although, you know, a tool is just a tool, we have so many really creative, inspired people out there that if you gave them even the most basic level of what Rightful Ruler is hoping to create, which is what the $8,000 goal is, if you just got that into their hands, they're going to change the way we watch 40K. They're going to change the way we coach 40K and potentially even judge and adjudicate it. So I think this is, I mean, it sounds hyperbolic, but I really do think this is a critical tool for doing some really cool things and evolving how we watch this game.
Well, anytime that, you know, we have a call to action for somebody to throw in some dollars kind of thing, I take it very seriously. So I think everyone has to make that choice if this is something they want to contribute for. Can they get any personal value out of it for some of the things we've talked about in their own games or in their own community or local tournaments or whatever of games? But then also, to your point, you know, are you fine contributing to kind of like the greater good of things for stuff that you and I are pretty passionate about?
Yeah,
may not see a direct return of that. This is helping the development of that and moving this type of thing forward.
Hey, and guys, full disclosure, I promise you, I've pledged and pledged substantially. So, I'm my money is where my mouth is on this. And I think some other things to point out is if you do back it, there are some benefits you get for backing it, which include, by the way, access to the current version of the cell phone Rightful Ruler app. So if you did want to play around with that, you get it as part of this. You also get credited with helping, bring this to life. And something to note too, is that this tool is not going to be something that that Rightful Ruler is going to turn around and charge people for. So actually it will be free to use on what's called a attribution license. So essentially, whether it be in the show notes or a credit at the end, giving credit to the, really cool AR technology is basically the requirement for using it. So broadcasters, no matter how big or small, will have access to very cutting edge stuff. Like this is not something that I think you'd necessarily expect to see developed for a niche tabletop game, as passionate as we are. This is some pretty advanced tech stuff that, the only examples I've given that have something like this for their broadcasts are very wealthy sports and things that have, a lot of resources behind them. And it's something that we could have in our hobby. So I just, whether or not it's a selfish thing or just something that you'd love to see your favorite battle report producer or streamer have in their hands to be able to use, please swing by Kickstarter, search for Rightful Ruler. Again, the link will be in the show notes, I'm sure. Thank you, Mr. Murphy. And kick in whatever you can. And please, if you could, if you got any clout, if you got some pals, please share it on social media. Get the word out as much as you can. We're about halfway home. We've got a couple weeks left. So I really do think there's a great chance of this actually getting funded. We just need to get it in front of enough eyeballs so that enough people can chip in what they can and get this thing to the finish line.
Well, Val, it's always great talking with you, and especially about some things like this and things that help move the community forward. And I think this is a piece of that. I'm looking forward to great things to come with it.
Hey, me too. And I really appreciate you sharing this lovely podcast that I don't get to get out to as often as I once did. And by the way, for the record, Paul, I think you guys have the best Forge the Narrative lineup I personally have ever heard. So,
thanks for that. We'll have to get you on more often, especially to hang out with the crew. It's fun. I mean, yeah, it's continue
to
have a great
dare
time.
Bump. Don't you dare bump Red, Tanya, or Adam in order to put me on the show. Oh, all right. Do not do that.
That would not happen.
That is a disservice. Okay.
Oh, well, folks, thanks for listening to us here. Check it out. It will be in the show notes for the Kickstarter for this week. And let us know what you think. I mean, heck, yeah, I'm curious to know if people would like to incorporate this stuff into their games or their local tournaments or even their narrative events. I mean, when I talked about like putting the names of your units and that kind of stuff,
Yeah.
Tell your stories kind of thing. Let us know if you think it'd be neat.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll see y'all. Now I'm going to go back to the show.
Wonderful.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody, we are back. I hope you enjoyed that segment. It's always fun talking with Val. But, I mean, Rightful Ruler, I've got the app installed.
It's a phenomenal tool. And I hope that it can be, I hope that with the support of the community, it can become everything that we want it to be. I mean, this is a total game changer for what, you know, people like me and Paul do, which I hope that you guys are aware of.
Yeah, we do commentary for tournaments sometimes.
Yeah, what he said.
I don't know why he's trying to be mysterious about it, but yeah, we do some stuff.
You know, I don't know. I'm a man. I try and work more off attraction than promotion, and I'm quite attractive. So.
But it's technology, right? So this is stuff like the augmented reality, like bring it to our tabletop on you know, you've seen those memes or whatever, but like these 100 devices are now in your pocket. And it's true. And we're just going to get more and more out of them. And this is, I think, maybe a way to move the needle on that forward.
Something like this would have made templates so much more viable. You remember arguing the arguments you'd have about whether it was 4 guys under the template or 5 guys under the template? And then you flip open your phone and just you allocate the spot where the pip landed, and then it just tells you how many dudes are in within range of it. Done. Would have been such a game changer a couple of years ago.
And I know that not everybody has disposable income or spare cash or whatever, but at least check it out and see what we're talking about. And then if it is something that appeals to you, then throw something at it.
Oh, absolutely. This is a tool for the masses. This isn't something that's just for people like Paul and myself. This is hopefully something that everybody can get some usage out of. Could be a bit of a game changer and bring a bit of, consistency to people's games.
I think it's neat. I mean, there's so many things that are just neat. And look, when you're sitting around hanging out, whatever. I mean, sometimes, look, I like putting the phones and apps down while I'm playing 40K. Like, it's not for everybody, but whatever. Anyway, check it out.
That's the whole thing, though, man. This is the front. This is the edge, the bleeding edge, man. This is Cyberpunk 2027. I'm telling you, man, like, seriously, you're right. You should put the phone down. You should put the apps down. You put your glasses on, you put your contact in or whatever. And the next thing you know, you've got augmented reality and you're looking at the table, and no longer do we need to measure anything. You don't just have to put your phone down, Paul, you put down your tape measure, because now you're just looking at the table. The Rightful Ruler app is built into your contact lens or whatever. It's all connected through the watch on your wrist or the phone that you keep in your pocket or whatever. This is what we're pushing to. We need to support these kinds of efforts. The awesomeness about Kickstarter or Patreon or whatever is that some of these folks are really pushing the limits. And I'm not saying that it's going to be necessarily Rightful Ruler, like you hope that for them, like you want everybody to be able to succeed, but this is the building blocks to it. And to be able to play a game where everything, okay, I touch a model, it doesn't have to be AI. Everybody gets hung up on AI. Just good enough programming, right? Just advanced programming. I'm looking at this thing. It registers what model it is. It automatically knows its stats. I can see the whole profile. Whatever you're looking at across the table from me, you can see all their profiles. We don't have to view this stuff. You don't have to pull up a book anymore, so on and so forth. I mean, this is awesome. It is.
Yeah.
Think about how satisfying it will be to call down an orbital bombardment, even though it will largely probably do nothing, but how cool it would be.
You go to roll dice and you see like bullets and lasers or something shooting from the models. Like that's just, it's going to be awesome.
How the orb B has like fallen from grace.
But never come back. It's on a cycle.
Yeah.
So we're talking about active versus passive judging. And this is a topic I think we've addressed, or at least spoken about from time to time. But, and it comes up every now and then. Typically, the conversations respond when there might be a need for it. And as we have a desire to have tight, solid competitive games in a competitive setting, for tournaments wise. And maybe we're going to be getting back to tournaments in some time in the near future, when as more and more vaccines and stuff get rolled out. Again, when it's safe to do so, this is by no means a rush to get people out if you're not comfortable doing it. But I'd like to be hopeful about when the time comes when we can.
Yeah, same. So anybody able to explain what the difference is between the two? Because some people might just be like, well, judging is judging, isn't it? There's what's really the difference?
I personally, before I go any further, like the whole referee judging kind of deal, I think I feel very strongly about this. So, I'm going to apologize, and I'm not necessarily sorry, but if this steps on anybody's toes, I mean, sometimes when you take a stand, it does that. But I think that there's something to active judging. I think especially when it comes down to competitive gaming, I think that especially in the game we play, there's something to that that kind of accentuates the gameplay itself, because we do so much in our you know the sportsmanship of our game and the various levels of it. I think that something though, when it gets to the competitive levels, what we've talked about is that unfortunately humans, the human condition, we suffer from these two concepts, and I've spoke about them before, but Ehrgeiz and Rumsucht, right? Ehrgeiz is greed for honor, and Rumsucht is literally thirst or hankering for glory. You take these two concepts, and one kind of plays out in certain ways and the other plays out in other ways. And you've got these two concepts, and unfortunately, it can drive humans to do some pretty unfortunate things when it comes to games. And when we play this kind of informal setting that we do for 40K, because, you know, it's not like tennis. You don't have someone sitting up in a chair overlooking the whole thing the whole time. But when you do add in this active judging style, so passive judging, you know, a lot of it is waiting for something to happen. And you can't, passive judging, you can't really, nothing happens unless someone makes an issue out of it. And to a certain point, should players really have to be the ones that step up and say that there's an issue? Not in all cases, in my opinion. And that's where with passive judging, part of the problem is that not all players necessarily come to the table with the attitude. It almost, you know, you're fighting uphill, because do you really want to have to deal with the other person when you call them out on something? And then what if you're mistaken or whatever, and now you're causing more problems than maybe it was worth? There's a dilemma to that. And I think the nice thing about active judging is it somewhat takes that away, and it allows the players to focus on just their game to a certain extent, as well as upholding the sportsmanship and the spirit of the game as far as like just playing with the other person, and allowing the active judge to kind of quote unquote be the bad guy. And I think that's there's an accountability factor to that I really support when it comes to active judging in the competitive scene. I really think that there's something to that. And I know that there's, look, all plans need to be feasible, sustainable, acceptable. You got to be able to push these things through. And when you get into these larger formats, that's very difficult because just the number of people. And it's not, you know, judges aren't getting paid or anything. We don't have this commission that certifies, credentializes, you know, and you could make an argument to do some of those things, but I think that there's a lot of other cultural community aspects we need to probably work through on our way there. And I know I've just blown away on this whole thing, but I've got to say, like, we're not going to get rid of Ehrgeiz and Rumsucht. Those literally exist, and they are part of people, and it's not going away, but there are ways to mitigate it. And so I think that there are a lot of people thinking about some good things right now. And I do, you know, you mentioned Val Heffelfinger, man, he has written some great stuff in the Comp 40K and for the TOs and everything, that I really do appreciate the way he's gone about some things and how he's phrased it. And I think that there's a lot of weight behind that. I do think that ITC has come out with a great code of conduct. And if you can push to that, and for some events, you know, people can consider active judging, it's almost like tact. Like the right time, the right place, right time kind of deal for when you actually assert active judging. I think there's a lot of weight to that. And I again, so thank you for allowing me to share that. But what are you guys' thoughts?
One other thing is that is without active judging of any kind, like if you were just absent completely, you're putting a lot of onus on the opponent, on yourself to know everything about your opponent's army.
Well, you hear about it every event. It's always somebody comes back at the end of the event and says, "Oh, this guy was doing this wrong, but neither of us knew it at the time." Or "Well, this guy was doing this wrong."
I don't say every event. But I think the majority of games are just, you know, above board and everything's, you know, whatever.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know what
but,
I mean?
But, I mean, so there's, in my mind, we have to, when we talk about judging and we talk about any supposed misconduct, we have to realize there's two very distinct things that happen in 40K, and one of them happens so much more than the other, like overwhelmingly more than the other. And that one is what I like to call unforced errors. You know, you talk about tennis. Tennis has a stat called unforced errors. And that's literally, you just made a mistake with a rule. Like you, or you, you know, you moved 4 inches and you moved, you know, 4.5. just because you weren't paying attention or you're moving so many dudes at once that, you know, ifs and buts happen. And these things are just human error. They just happen. They're not malicious. There's nothing really malicious to them. And then you have the malicious cheating, which I've only had like a handful in hundreds, probably close to thousands of games of tabletop wargaming. I've only encountered malicious cheating, like, you know, probably less than five times. But I encounter unforced errors. Like, I'm of the opinion that I make unforced errors. If I go to a five-game GT, one game out of those five in one series of dice, I probably miscount. And maybe I've got one dice too many or three dice not enough.
That's actually unforced error. One of the reasons I don't remove the dice from the table. I declare my hits or misses or whatever. And sometimes like, oh, that one's a three or whatever instead of a four. I mean, and so you got to have that discussion, you know, not say transparency, not a discussion, but transparency with your opponent.
So my first kind of real exposure to active judging was at ETC. I was playing in the singles and I was playing Tau, and I deployed broadsides on the second floor of a building because naturally you were playing ITC. They couldn't see through the bottom floor, but I wasn't really afraid of them getting shot. And because it was a kind of a, you know, I didn't know I couldn't do it because they got the battle suit keyword. They don't have infantry. They can't go on the second floor.
Deploy them there though?
No, that was it. Cause I deployed them. That's what I thought. I thought if I deploy them there and just never intend to move, cause they can see the whole table, then it's fine. And then the judge came over and said, nah, can't do it. I'm like, oh, but I deployed them there. He's like, still can't do it. And I was really happy he told me that then, because, you know, if that happened in a game where it really mattered and, you know, I'm all of a sudden I'm at the mercy of my opponent in some ways, not that, you know, I mean, obviously, you don't expect someone to ever try and get one over on you for something like that. But at the same time,
if you're in violation, you've got to open it up. You've got to open it up to not compromising. You know,
exactly right. Yeah, exactly right. You're putting yourself at the mercy of your opponent and what they think is reasonable, rather than just, you know, the judge just walks in, tells you what needs to happen, and you can just shut up and go about it. There's no bad feelings. There's no bad nothing. Here's the judge. Do what he says. And so I'm a big fan of active judging. I think active judging is the way forward. But I don't believe. At the same time, people attend tournaments for different reasons. And I don't always believe that somebody who's just there to enjoy themselves and
to get,
you know,
five games in a weekend,
mates,
to play more games than he's played in the last 3
exactly.
months.
Exactly. See some people I haven't seen in years. I'm not always of the opinion that they need to have a level of scrutiny upon them that would make their games less enjoyable. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yep. And so I think what we're talking about is when the stakes are higher, maybe we should move towards being cooler with active judging.
That's pretty much it. That's pretty much my wording. And I know in other game systems, there's a kind of a judge tier level associated with different types of events and different, you know, leagues, et cetera, et cetera. It would be cool to see, you know, a judge level applied to things. Like, people can know beforehand what level of scrutiny they're going to be upon, or what level they can expect to be under during an event, XYZ event. And then you could be like, oh yeah, I'm going to the Nova Invitational, very prestigious, you know, a high level event, only 20 players. I'm going to be under the max level of scrutiny possible, and I need to be as sharp as possible when writing my list, when playing my games, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have, like, you know, Paul's local 500 point combat patrol, you know?
There's going to be some killers in this pod.
But at the same time, that could be closer to what we're used to. I'm not sure what you guys are used to in your area, but the only judging I ever got until I went to something like an ETC was the passive judging. Unless I approach the TO with an issue in the game, they will not take a hand.
An issue here. So, like, you know, and when we get back to old times, hopefully, again, so optimistic, but again, not trying to force it. You know, when there's 100 tables in the room, you don't have 100 qualified active judges. You just don't. You don't have, even if we had a judge tier system, it's still, there's a capacity thing. I think that there's a time, and I'm not trying to compromise or split the difference or whatever with it. I think there is a time and a place for it, because in a video game, if we're playing a video game, the code would prevent these types of minor infractions.
You're right. Yeah.
And we're dealing with moving hundreds of tiny little pieces, you know, with imperfect tape measures we got from the hardware store or Walmart or whatever, you know, like, I don't know. But I do think that when the in events to where you're either in the final rounds or whatever, or the top two players are slugging it out for the championship spot for that weekend for your little plastic trophy. I got to keep this in perspective. your little made up points, and I'm not trying to trivialize it. I have fought hard for those little plastic trophies and made up points, but you want. I think ultimately, when you're there playing at that level of competition, you want a tight game, a fair game. Fair is a charged word in business. When you say the word fair, it can mean all sorts of things. But I'm using it in the actual classic sense here. A game that is equal for both players, where both players are held to the same level of accountability. I don't even know where I'm going, but you know what I'm saying. right? I may be butchering the point.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. I don't think you're butchering the point. I think that there's, it's tough in a lot of cases. I mean, I did very active judging for the one pro tabletop event, right? And by very active judging, I mean, we were very, very much engaged, very much turned on and to the, and the whole event. I mean, there was certain aspects to it that it was, I thought it was definitely warranted. And I thought that it was important that the standards were not just apparent, but were obviously and readily publicly enforced to such, I mean, you wanted people to know that there were these judges. And as it came down, I mean, we essentially got to the scoring of it. And we're talking like the last few games, because to a certain point, it still played itself out. But given the competitive nature of it, it was almost nearly a factor of elimination. People were still playing games and enjoying themselves. But when it came to the final, you know, the top tables, there was a judge at each table, and the judges were actually keeping score and reporting into the system. And so the players didn't have, but that's, again, like, is active judging, like I said, when it comes to the matter of tact, does it have to be every single time? Should active judging be the all around standard? I don't think so. I don't think so by any means. I do think it's absolutely a matter of time and place and under what circumstances are we doing it. And there's a case where, like, as we've said, you know, I mean, you just don't need to apply yourself to that degree or activity in all cases. And I know some people would say, you know, well, I mean, anybody should, you shouldn't need active judging because you should be able to trust people to that certain extent. But I'd still go back to what I said earlier.
Well, active judging, yeah, it doesn't imply that one person had intent or the other.
Right. Correct. Exactly.
Or that even has a suspicion of needing an active judge or whatever. Like, there's nothing. This is just more of a is this a part of a standard we should be thinking about?
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to solve it on this show. So I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying we can't.
Well, I just think it's something that people should, the more of that information should be out there with the community. And the community is the one that should be, you know, deciding what's right and wrong for them and their events. I like the idea of active judging, but like we said, there's so much more of a burden on the TOs, so much more of a burden on having professional, concise judges that really know their stuff, know their craft.
Well, I think it's up to, you know, I'll say this every single time we talk about this, it's if you're putting on the risk, if you're organizing an event, you're the organizer of the event and taking on all the risk, you can do whatever you want. Just be open about it, like publish it well in advance so people can choose, you know, they know what they're getting into, kind of thing.
Yeah,
absolutely. And
if you want active judging, you want your final games, your final four tables or whatever to be just like a Swiss watch, then, you know, do it and say you're going to do it.
Yeah,
exactly right.
I'm not opposed to it. Like, I mean, it's one of those. So this is, you know, depending on, like, I might have a different opinion the next time we even talk about it. But I mean, I think that, you know, with the game, with the rule set being as tight as it is, and we've got a fairly tight, we haven't had as much experience with it as we want because of the way the world is right now, but it's a pretty tight rule set. And so I think it's easier to enforce these types of things now than it probably ever has been. It's a well-documented rule system.
Yeah, this is, if we're ever going to get judging of a certain caliber for rule system, it's going to be this one. Could you imagine trying to be an active judge in 7th edition? You'd just be like, nah, I'd rather not play the game. I'd rather be not associated with the game than try and actively judge this mess.
Part of what we do on the show is just kind of discuss things, you know, topics that are kind of under the surface out there in the community, and this is one of them. And
well, we bring people's attentions to things that they might want to think about, you know, because literally the people we're talking to right now, people listening to this, you guys are the people who decide the changes that happen in the community.
Oh.
So it's not people like Paul, myself, and Red. We just, you know, sit here and talk about it.
Yeah, it's easy for us to talk about in the mind.
It's very easy to talk about it. But yeah, we aren't the guys who just walk out and be like, we're a TO and we're going to implement this and this and this and this and this, et cetera, et cetera. Or tell your TO what you want for your events.
That's
like,
it.
You know, yeah.
That's it.
They're selling a product that you're purchasing. Like, tell them what you want, you want to purchase.
Yeah. And I do, I think that, like, even you're using magic as an analog in some capacity, is that they are for the final, now the typically it's single elimination, it gets down to a final thing. And the I do believe that the final, like, top eight are actively judged.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think even higher than that. Or are you talking in our realms, things like the LVO?
No, I mean in like just Magic specifically. I think it gets down to like the Sweet 16 or top eight or whatever, that those tables are like 100% actively judged. I don't know that to be true, but I believe it to be true.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's my understanding as well. I don't know as much about Magic as many others, though.
Yeah. Well, that's been a good. I mean, thanks for bringing it up. I think it's been a cool discussion.
Yeah, I think it's more poignant now for things that are happening in the community. I think it's more poignant now than it has been in a while, and with us getting back to, you know, hopefully playing and enjoying the hobby, enjoying the games again. These are the things that we can take step forwards with. You know, when we've got something like a little bit of a softer reset on the community, having had to take a forced break, we can start better than we ended. Is the way I want to look about things, rather than saying, oh, doom and gloom, it's, you know, having to pull everything back together again. Let's implement new things as we come into this new era of the game.
We don't have to come back the same way. You're right. We can
exactly.
Yeah, I dig it. Well, gentlemen, thanks a lot for discussing these thoughts. Thanks everybody for listening. We can wrap up. I mean, check out Rightful Ruler. Check out Discount Games. If you can support those things, you know, all great for the community. Anybody else got anything they want to add before we wrap up?
Nah.
Have fun. Enjoy your games. Remember, it's a community thing. As much as we love the lore and the everything that goes into it, we're enjoying this game with other people. I don't think we've come up with a solitaire version yet, necessarily, but it is absolutely about playing with your friends and meeting new people and building this community. So all those things considered, I hope everyone out there enjoys themselves and their games as we start to, especially as you know, the vaccine's out and people are starting to get out there more.
Crap. I almost forgot to talk about Saturnine.
Oh,
the book is amazing. I'm not going to, no spoilers. The book is amazing. There is character development, lore development, world building, clearly setting things up for after the siege type, some stories that, you know, that kind of stuff. It's the book packs a punch. And if any reservations about reading it or whatever, I don't know why you would, is Dan Abnett writing about, you know, amazing storylines and something that means, you know, a lot to a lot of people that play this game. But there's some really cool things in this book. And I can't wait till there's like enough time has gone by. We could talk about some of the plot points that I don't want to risk spoiling anything for anybody.
Yeah, can't do it. Cannot. Yeah, it's so good. But I haven't read the whole thing. I've just heard a bit of the TLDR. I've got so many books on the go. I don't know.
Five out of five stars. Totally worth it. I listen to it on audio. I typically read, but I typically, like, I'll read when I travel and haven't been doing that. So, you know, whatever. So while I've been doing these marathon painting sessions, I've been jamming to this audiobook and absolutely love it. It's one of the best. That's probably the best way to describe it. Of all the Horus Heresy and Siege of Terra novels, it's one of the best.
Wow. That's big cool. Big cool.
Yeah. They do. I mean, not afraid to push even this late in the game. And it's not like, you know, some movies will throw in a new character 5 minutes before the movie's over. You're like, what on earth did you even? It's not like that. It's not like that at all. But there's some new stuff. There's things that move. Really does move the story along. Really does even further flesh out the world. And some of the things you'll be like, what on earth did I just read? There are some amazing interactions between characters that don't even know they're interacting. Well, one of them knows they're interacting, the other doesn't. It's like, again, no, I'm just going to stop talking. It's a wonderful book.
Nice.
All right, guys, we'll see y'all next week.
See ya.
Take care.
Nobody puts baby in the corner.